I'm Sean Crawford. The Illinois Constitution turned 50 years old in December. Longtime journalist Charlie Wheeler covered the convention where it was written in 1970, and I talked with him about the document and its legacy. So, Charlie, let's go back 50 years. Why did people feel a new constitution was needed?
At the time, people referred to the existing constitution, which was drafted and ratified way back in 1870, as a constitution for the horse and buggy age. And so it was, why do we have to live under these constraints of a 19th century document? Some of the things were totally irrelevant anymore. There was language in there about the Columbian Exposition, the limit on the state's ability to borrow money, for example. There was a provision in the old constitution that said if the state wanted to borrow more than $250,000, it had to ask the voters in a referendum. By the time you reached the turn of the century, $250,000 wasn't very much, even back in the 1900s. Probably by the 1950s, it was pretty clear that this constitution just needed to be updated and rewritten from beginning to end. And so that's what the delegates who gathered in Springfield back right at the tail end of 69 and then worked through 70 up until September of 70, that's what they did.
So it was a massive undertaking to go back to something written 100 years earlier. Well, here we are 50 years on since this one was put in place. And while there have been quite a few changes to the Constitution since it was first put in place, we have not had that type of review that a constitutional convention would bring for the 1970 document.
No, and I think part of it was the people who drafted the document in 1970 were aware of the constraints that the old charter had placed on the state. And so they tried to set out kind of a broad general framework and then allow it to the General Assembly and future generations to fill in the details, I guess would be one way to look at it. If you were to read through the Constitution, you'll see many places where it says, as provided by law. And that meant that the delegates were saying, here's kind of the grand scheme, but it's up to the General Assembly to fill in the details. Because, as I say, they were very cognizant of the 1870 Constitution with some of its restrictions, some of the very specific provisions that might have made sense back in 1870, but were totally irrelevant, if you want to use the term, by the time 1970 came along.
Charlie, in your article, you use the term the document made government more efficient. And what did you mean by that?
I think it clarified the roles, if you will, of the three branches of government. Under the old Constitution, for example, the lieutenant governor was the presiding officer over the Senate, just as we have at the federal level, where the vice president is the presiding officer over the U.S. Senate. Well, the delegates wanted to make sure the executive and the legislative were separated, so they did away with the lieutenant governor's role in the Senate, and instead the Senate now elects its own president. They also clarified the budgeting. They made it clear that the governor proposes the budget, and then the legislature reacts, adjusts, amends, approves a budget, and the governor has the ability to reduce items, to strike items out with a veto. The legislature has the final word in that they can restore anything that he cut or reduced. It made it clear that we could have annual sessions. For most of the time that the 1870 Constitution was in effect, the General Assembly would meet in January of the odd-numbered year following the election in the preceding even-numbered year. They'd work for 6 months. They'd adjourn in June of the odd-numbered year, and they'd be gone. That would be it. They would not be back. A governor could bring them back in special session. But for example, if a governor were to veto a bill that was passed back in the olden days, there was no way for the legislature to override it because a governor was not going to call the legislature back into special session to override his veto. If I recall correctly, that 100-year span, I think there were only like three or four vetoes that were overridden. And those were on bills that were passed early enough in the spring that the governor had to act on them before the legislature went home on June 30th. If you will, those kinds of things, cleaning up some of the past practices. And for example, the revenue article is a lot broader. It gives a lot of authority to the General Assembly to increase and impose taxes. The one thing, as we learned, if you have an income tax, it has to be at a flat rate. Well, the old article in the old Constitution, for example, said that the General Assembly could tax certain occupations, and then it listed specifically peddlers, hawkers, showmen, jugglers, and innkeepers. So there was no clear authority to impose an income tax. As a matter of fact, at the beginning of the Depression, Republican Governor Lewis Emerson and the legislature passed a graduated income tax, but before it could actually take effect, the Supreme Court threw it out, saying, no, the Constitution doesn't say you can do that. And so those kinds of hangovers from way back when.
One key decision that was made was to only allow for a flat income tax. This topic has come up this year because Governor J.B. Pritzker had pushed for a graduated income tax system, but voters said no. Why was it written that way?
I think one of the overriding concerns of the delegates was whatever we do, we want it to be something that voters will be happy to ratify. And I think they were very much aware of the fact that there had been a prior convention in the 1920s whose product was rejected by the voters. And so there was always this concern.
When they were discussing these issues, which ones came up the most and which ones had the most debate?
Well, probably the most contentious ones were the four issues that the delegates decided that they would submit to the voters separately. So when voters went to the polls back in December of 1970, they had the question, should we adopt the Constitution or not? And if we adopt the Constitution, what should it say about these four issues? And the first one was cumulative voting. Should we retain the system that we've had for 100 years, where in each legislative districts, three members are elected to the Illinois House, and a voter has three votes, which they can give all to one candidate, divide between two, or spread amongst three. And that was something that was enacted in 1870, and it was probably the most forward-reaching element of the 1870 Constitution, at least I would say, because it was seen as a way to bind the wounds of the state after the Civil War, where Southern Illinois was strongly Democrat and very much had a kind of, well, I shouldn't say very much, there were folks down there who really supported the Confederacy. Up north was solidly Republican. And so the delegates in 1870 figured, well, if we design this election system for the House, it will pretty much guarantee that Republicans would be elected from the South and Democrats from the North. So that's what we'll do. And that's how it played out for 100 years. So one of the questions was, well, should we keep this or should we go to single member districts? The second one is, should we continue to elect judges or should they be appointed by someone? Should we have capital punishment in Illinois or no? And then the fourth one was, should we reduce the age requirement for voting from 21 down to 18? Now, as you look back on it, you say to yourself, what's the big issue with whether you can vote at 18 or 21? I thought that was decided. Well, the voters 50 years ago said no, should be 21. But a couple years later, the U.S. Constitution was changed to reduce the age to 18. And then, of course, we followed suit. The voters kept cumulative voting until 1980, when the First Amendment to the new Constitution, the so-called Cutback Amendment, did away with cumulative voting and reduce the size of the House by one third. On the question of merit selection, voters said, no, we shouldn't have merit selection. And we still elect judges. And finally, they said, yes, let's keep capital punishment. And then maybe, what would it be, 45 years later, maybe we finally outlawed capital punishment in Illinois. But it was funny because one of the issues that really didn't cause much of a concern was the Equal Rights Amendment that's in our Constitution. And it says, the equal protection of the laws shall not be denied or abridged on account of sex by the state or its units of local government and school districts. That was pretty straightforward. It didn't cause any great stir. And yet a few years later, the hottest issue in the General Assembly for the 70s, early 80s, was the federal Equal Rights Amendment, which said basically the same thing. Illinois never did get around to ratifying the federal ERA until just a couple of years ago. And another one that's probably gets more attention nowadays than anything else is the pension protection provision, which says that membership in any pension or retirement system of the state, any unit of local government or school district, or any agency or instrumentality thereof shall be an enforceable contractual relationship, the benefits of which shall not be diminished or impaired. Now, I don't remember at the time that that was one of the real hot button issues. And as a matter of fact, it was sort of seen as a corollary to one of the big asks that Mayor Daley had, which was home rule, the ability for local governments above a certain size to manage their own affairs without having to go to the state legislature every time they had to do something. Well, police and fire unions were very much concerned that if we give home rule to Mayor Daley and other municipalities, the first time there's any kind of a budget crunch, the first thing that the mayors will do is say, okay, we're going to cut pension benefits. And so to protect those benefits, the language was put into the Constitution. And at the time, there were people who said, well, if you write that into the Constitution, the General Assembly will never be able to change pension benefits going forward. And the people who were proposing the amendment, the reaction was, well, yeah, that's basically the idea here.
So all these years have passed and the many changes that have been proposed and some of them enacted to change the Constitution, the residents of the state have had a chance a couple of times to decide if they want another constitutional convention. They've turned down that idea twice, but some say they'd like to see it, reopening issues for discussion that others have pushed against. You mentioned the public employee unions as a good example of an issue when it comes to pension protections. Do you think we'll see another constitutional convention anytime soon? The next opportunity, I guess, to consider that and to possibly vote on it, I guess, would be 2028.
Yeah, that is correct. That was one of the things that was added to the new Constitution. Well, the then new Constitution 50 years ago, because one of the difficulties with the 1870 Constitution was it was very hard to change it, and there was no real process for asking voters, should we have another convention? But the delegates in 1970 were very aware of the fact that we don't want to lock the future into what we do today, because who knows what tomorrow is going to bring. So we should make sure there are provisions in here that make it easier to amend. They also put in the automatic call so that you don't have to wait. What would it have been? It would have been 98 years before, in 1968, the legislature asked Illinois voters, should we have another convention? And so every 20 years, as you say, the voters get asked. And the first one was in, it would have been in 1988, and 3/4 of the voters said no. Then in 2008, 2/3 of the voters said no, we don't need another convention. And the next one would be in 2028. Based on that trend, I don't think people are going to accept it. The thing is, I don't think there's anything in the Constitution that is so archaic or so unworkable that would require a convention as opposed to an amendment to deal with that particular problem. I don't think we need to totally restructure state government, which was one of the arguments made back then. We can do it, as I note in the article, we can do it with a scalpel through amendments rather than calling a convention and possibly putting a chainsaw to the whole thing.
That's journalist Charlie Wheeler, who covered the 1970 Illinois Constitutional Convention.